Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This is Internet Marketing.
Welcome to the Internet Marketing Podcast from Site Visibility. I'm joined by a very special guest today, James Mulvaney. Is that how you pronounce your name, James? Mulvaney?
Yeah.
Mulvaney?
Mulvaney.
James Mulvaney.
Yeah.
Mulvaney. James Mulvaney from podcast.co and many other businesses as well, James. Can you just explain to our listeners some of the other projects and companies you're involved with and what you do at podcast.co?
Yeah, so I'm a bit of a podcasting and sort of radio cheerleader, really. I have three different websites or businesses basically through two different companies. So we've got radio.co, which is an online broadcasting platform for radio stations, handles everything from playout to streaming to statistics. It's like a radio station in a box. And at podcast.co, we have a platform for podcasters, which makes it super simple to start a podcast, get it distributed to all the major channels, so Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, etc. And also more recently, as part of podcast.co, we've launched a spin-off project called matchmaker.fm, which is a platform to connect podcasters and guests. We're kind of billing it as like the Tinder for podcasters. So very busy at the moment, lots of stuff going on. And really, one of the things I'm doing at the moment, which is why we're speaking today, is I'm setting myself a challenge to record, be a guest on 30 podcasts within 30 days. So super packed day, but been talking lots about podcasting, having some really interesting conversations so far as well.
We'll probably touch in conversation on all three of those companies, but where are you at today in terms of number? How many out of 30 have you achieved so far?
So this is the number 14, I think.
14. And yeah. We're recording another podcast for my personal podcast, The Advertising Hour. So I'm assuming that will be 15.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, brilliant. So you're, and was this for to achieve for the end of May? So are you on schedule?
I think we'll probably hit it. I'm kind of thinking to myself, right, okay, well, if we don't do it within 30 actual days, I could kind of like twist it to 30 working days, because obviously I'm not recording on Saturdays and Sundays. So I can give myself 6 weeks. But I think it was the 27th of April when I first started this challenge. So obviously I've got another sort of 10, 12 days. So I think, yeah, we might actually get there or be at least very close.
And we were talking just before we started recording about your schedule for today. I think you've got six podcast you're fitting in today around that number.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate you taking the time out and let's try and make this enjoyable for you so you don't feel drained by the end of the day. I'm sure it's quite a challenge, a mental challenge. So I'm really looking forward to speaking to you about the topic, common obstacles in podcasting and how to overcome them. And the reason when I was thinking about this topic to discuss with you, you are a thought leader in the podcasting space. I know you've got tons of experience, you explained at the beginning. And so podcasting is such a broad topic. I wanted to think about what's the most useful information I thought you could share with me and our listeners at this particular time. And it's really a struggle with podcasting because you can go in many different directions. But I was thinking about the economy, the climate that we're in. I know myself that it forced me into a position where I was thinking, right, I really need to focus on this podcast that I've been planning on launching. So I've been putting in the time and effort to get it sorted. And I imagine lots of other people are in that position.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for me, there have been so many obstacles and perhaps ones I've put in place for myself about why I haven't launched a podcast till now. And also why we haven't made some changes to the podcast that you're on right now, the Internet Marketing Podcast. So I thought it was a good time to discuss the common obstacles. So in terms of the, is that in terms of what I just discussed in terms of the current climate, people wanting to launch new podcasts, that being a booming time for podcasting, is that what you're seeing across your businesses?
We've definitely, with radio.co, interesting, we've seen a huge increase in people starting projects. With podcast.co, we have seen an increase as well, not quite as drastic, but across both channels, you know, the streaming services and entertainment industry seems to be doing well from the current crisis. And I would suggest that, you know, on both of these businesses, we've done well as a company. But also interestingly as well, we're seeing more demand for listeners as well. So on radio.co at peak times, we're getting three times the amount of traffic tuning into our clients' radio stations than we would have done, you know, say in January. So a huge boost in, we've had to actually scale quite a bit of our infrastructure to keep with the, you know, the excess demand. Podcasting listeners as a whole have stayed about level. And it's interesting comparing the two mediums because I think, you know, podcasting is almost like an evolution of radio. But I think also, you know, radio, this live thing has a sort of more personal touch, perhaps, you know, because people know that it's live. And I think that's why radio is seeing more listeners, because everyone's in lockdown, rather than sort of relying on sort of Spotify playlists, which are quite, don't have that personal touch. People are tuning in to live radio because, you know, there's someone on the other end of the line almost. So I think it's quite interesting. But certainly, as I say, we are seeing growth. And I think people are using this time to start podcasts because, you know, it's something that's been on the to-do list, especially a lot of marketers and businesses. I think everyone's kind of catching on to the point that now you really kind of need a podcast as part of your marketing mix as a brand or a company or a startup. And it's a great way to engage with people as well. So, yeah, we're definitely seeing an uplift.
And in terms of your history, you've been involved in podcasting for quite a while now. How does this compare to other peaks in podcasting? I imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, but possibly an early peak when it started about 15 years ago. I think there was a peak around 5-6 years ago, and now it seems like there's another peak. But how does this compare for you? Is it the busiest it's been?
I think so. I think it's become a lot more commercialized, and that's for the better. If you think about when podcasting first came about, say between 2004 and 2010, it was really just reserved for enthusiasts, both in terms of listeners and also people presenting them as well. Because, you know, to listen to a podcast then, you had to download a file onto your computer, then transfer it onto your iPod, which was quite a complicated process. And that's not something that most people could really do, or it was a bit of an effort to go to. Whereas obviously nowadays, you know, you can stream an episode wherever you are via 4G. You don't have to necessarily download it. You know, and also you can browse through podcasts on your phone. You know, back then there just wasn't that capability. So I think that's driven part of this resurgence, you know, in the sort of the mid-2010s. But I think more recently, over the past 2-3 years, we're now seeing mainstream uplift. I think even 5 years ago, say even in 2015, if you went up to someone in the street and said, do you know what a podcast is? You know, you might get some people saying yes, but I think still there would be quite a few people saying, no, I've no idea, or something that they hadn't listened to a podcast. You know, they might have a vague idea of what it is. Whereas nowadays, I think partly driven by there's lots of celebrities now doing podcasts, that encourages the general public as a whole to sort of start listening and drives up consumption.
It's funny you mentioned that that's one of the key reasons. I was just thinking about my personal experience with podcasts. I've been listening to podcasts for probably around 8 years. But back 8 years ago, I was listening to one or two podcasts that were released maybe bi-weekly or monthly. But now I tune into podcasts, particularly my favourite podcasts, are weekly or bi-weekly. And they are, I guess they're just, I look forward to them. I anticipate them. I'm excited for them. I subscribe to them.
Yeah.
It's a very different... It's become part of my daily routine almost, whereas it was something that I would do maybe listen to ad hoc back 8 years ago. So, yeah, I agree with you. I'm interested in the comedy space, and particularly for comedians. There's loads of comedians with podcasts.
Totally.
And they've really started to use that as a revenue stream and a way to build a loyal audience. So on the topic of, I guess, benefits of podcasting, so there are obvious marketing benefits, which we don't necessarily need to get into detail in terms of building relationships from an SEO perspective. If a lot of our listeners will be familiar with that, there are ways to generate links from a social media perspective. It gives you content to talk about and repurpose for social. Are there any other benefits that you see to podcasting that are perhaps not widely known or not talked about often?
Well, I think you touched on relationships. Now, I know a lot of people who have guests on the show specifically for the purpose of business development, because, you know, if you're trying to get through to a key decision maker or, you know, someone who's a head of a company, CEO, founder, generally speaking, if you ring them up and say, oh, can I speak to so-and-so, please? What's this about? Well, it's sales, blah, blah, blah. No, of course, the answer is going to be no. It's very difficult to get direct connectivity with these people sometimes. But if you ask, well, do you want to be on my podcast? Of course, there's going to be more of it kind of helps break down the barriers for the gatekeeper. And, you know, you have a genuine conversation with people and they're building, you know, you're then building that rapport with that person. So I think from a business development perspective and networking opportunities, there's a lot there that people perhaps don't quite understand, and they just sort of see it as a medium. I think, as you clearly touched on, backlinks are important as well. And also, you know, we're seeing more and more businesses using it for internal comms as well. So employee engagement, particularly in larger organizations. I was actually doing a presentation for NHS Digital back in March, because they're kind of keen to start using the medium as a way to communicate with staff. And again, there's so many interesting things you can do there, because it doesn't necessarily have to just be one person, you know, sort of broadcasting to the masses. You could get people involved. So you can have different people from different departments getting involved with the conversation. It's a lot less intimidating than sticking a video camera in front of people's faces as well. So, you know, if you're just in a room having a sort of roundtable discussion, you can easily record that. People won't even know it's being recorded almost. And I think therefore it becomes more of a natural form of communication. As soon as you get a video camera out and say, right, speak to the camera, I think a lot of people just kind of freeze and don't really know what to do. So there's tons of benefits, I think, outside of, you know, obviously marketing. You know, you can have a podcast and, you know, obviously it will be good for business development in terms of you're reaching a new crowd, or you can use it to engage more with your customers. So tons of different methods that businesses can use it for and marketers.
Yeah, that's the fascinating point that you touched on as you were talking there, is the internal communication benefits. I wish I could remember. It might have even been podcast.co content that I've seen, but there was either an article or a guide where I saw about the how younger people in particular, or I think it was 20 to 40 year olds, how podcast consumption is increasing in that demographic. Yeah. And then why it makes sense to subsequently invest in an internal podcast to deliver internal messages to that demographic. And again, we were just talking about over these last 10 years, if podcast consumption has increased over the last 5 years in particular, or even you just mentioned the last 3 years, then of course it makes sense to invest in an internal podcast, even if you're just doing it to communicate internal messages within big companies. That's really interesting.
Well, I mean, the benefit of doing that, of course, as well, is people don't read emails anymore. You know, it's easy just to skip past them. So having a podcast is just another way that you can kind of get your message across.
That might be a really interesting way. There's a good piece of advice. If our listeners out there are, you know, in medium, large-sized companies, you're struggling to get cross-departmental communication flowing, maybe the podcast is the way through. There you go. A gem already. That's why we've got you on, for nuggets of information like that, James. Yeah. So thanks for that. Moving on to the topic that we were discussing at the beginning, common obstacles. So I see some of the most common obstacles that we're going to break down as time, money, not knowing the topics to discuss, and then the technical savviness or the perceived technical difficulties of launching a podcast. We're going to jump into all of those,
of course.
But if we could start with time. So just speaking from personal experience, one of the things I'm struggling with, this will actually be really helpful for me, is that I'm still trying to figure out the best way to build podcasting into my daily schedule. And really the goal for me is to keep consistent. And I've seen this out there for other podcasters that, you know, maybe you launch a podcast, you record one or two episodes, and then it kind of falls off. And that's typically down to some difficulty with building into a schedule and organization. Have you got any tips for that, for keeping consistent and keeping on schedule?
Yeah, so I think that's a really important topic. First of all, you mentioned that there's lots of podcasts out there where they've just done one or two episodes. And the problem with this is, of course, if you're starting from nothing, if you don't have a big pre-existing audience, and if you're a business, you've got a marketing list. First thing, you need to be pushing your content to them as well. Don't just upload the podcast and hope they'll find it, because they won't necessarily find it. But just starting and doing a couple of episodes, and maybe I think people assume that suddenly they're going to get loads of people listening straight away. Of course, that's not the case. You've got to work on it for a significant period of time, sometimes even like a year before you really start getting traction. As I say, unless you perhaps have a good pre-existing mechanism to push it out to people. But I think the main thing to do is, you know, be realistic and set yourself a schedule. With my personal podcast, Create, Reach, Inspire, I don't have the time to devote recording episode, you know, every single day or every single week even. So I do it in series. So I did sort of six or eight parts for season one, and the same with season two. And that kind of gives you the time to really focus on, number one, making that season really good. So you're not just kind of creating content for the sake of content, because sometimes that can, you know, really fatigue you. I think we've all been there as marketers, where you sort of feel like you're sort of, oh, I've got to create this for the sake of it, you know, because I've said I'll set it. So if you're focusing in on saying do six episodes, but just make them really good and plan them and make them excellent and make them really valuable for your customers or your prospects, you know, that's going to be more efficient than just saying, okay, let's just roll out 52 episodes over the next year. And you know, you can then have a little break between series as well. But make sure when you're actually releasing those episodes, so if you say record 8 episodes, you can always do them in advance as well. Make sure you're releasing them according to a consistent schedule, you know, during so every week or every 2 weeks or once a month or whatever it might be. But, you know, that's kind of like my advice is, if you're thinking about starting a podcast for your business, but you're scared that it's going to just be kind of all encompassing, just stick to doing season one, see how that gets on, and then look at season two, and you sort of break it down into manageable chunks.
That's really interesting. I never really thought about it that way. I actually, it's funny, I've not thought about it that way, but I do listen to some podcasts that break down into seasons. Yeah. and maybe have a 6 month or even year break between seasons. So yeah, great piece of advice if you're struggling to think of how you're going to keep things consistent. Yeah. On that topic, you touched on, you didn't use the phrase, but I guess bulk recording, so recording multiple episodes in a day, I guess what you're doing today.
Yeah.
And I alluded at the beginning of, as we started talking, that perhaps that's draining. I don't actually know. I've never gone through recording several bulk episodes in a day. How are you finding that? Is it draining? Is it enjoyable? What are the pros and cons of doing
this? This is my first day where I've done six in a single day.
Oh, okay.
However, I've been regularly kind of doing two or three a day. You know, again, I think having a little break in between episodes is good. But then, of course, as well, what I'm doing at the moment is you sort of commonly referred to as a podcast tour. So which is basically when you do a concentrated effort to appear on, you know, X number of podcasts within a specific time frame. This is done a lot by authors in particular when they're releasing a new book, because you can single out podcasts that you think really relevant to the topic of whatever book you're releasing and go on them and speak about your book. And you've got a lot of content to kind of go over then, because you've written the book, right? That can also be a good way for businesses as well. If you're not really ready to commit to yourself to doing your own podcast, just start appearing on some others, you know, because it kind of gives you familiar with the format, and obviously it will help you practice your speaking ability and that sort of thing as well, which is, you know, a great skill to have anyway. But, you know, it means that you're not necessarily committing to sort of doing it yourself. So I think it's a kind of a good way to start. But, you know, is it draining? Well, I'm kind of quite confident in recording these, and I'm used to doing this sort of stuff. So for me, I'm enjoying it. You know, I'm relishing it. And you have to give each episode your all and try and make each episode unique. I think those are the important things. I hear too many people who just kind of repeat the same stuff episode in, episode out, and they'll appear on 10 different podcasts, and effectively each episode will be the same. So I think trying to keep each one at least a little bit fresh, throwing some topics or discussion in that you haven't talked about on other podcasts is always important. And of course, if you're kind of sounding tired and bored on a podcast, it's going to come across, isn't it, to the listener. You need to try and remain upbeat, I think, and and it's sort of excited and happy and passionate, because that ultimately is the sales process. The listener will be purely judging you by how you sound.
The point you touched on there as well, I was thinking about, there's obviously the, as a guest, but then you touched on something there where you were saying, if you're talking about the exactly the same subject over and over again, of course that's going to be draining.
Yeah.
Of course it's going to come across as, yeah. But even as a host, when we get pitched people that want to come on our podcast, and I kind of read the pitch, and it really is, I can tell it's templated. It, you know, they've sent this out to 100 podcasts, and it's just not exactly There's no desire to move beyond this one topic. Yeah, that can be just a bit draining or boring as a host to think, I want to have the creative freedom here to kind of move around this topic a little bit. So I think, yeah, like you said, maybe tailoring podcasts as much as you can if you're a guest, and being willing to explore topics in a little bit more detail. And you're completely right. There's no way to escape the energy on a podcast. That's what I find fascinating, yeah, is that I think also you have to keep yourself engaged. You have to be curious, because if you're not curious, that will come across on a podcast and it just feels a bit robotic.
Absolutely. The other thing as well is, when you're on a podcast, think about who the audience is and what the host wants to achieve, because you know, some people embark on podcast tours and they're very much just thinking, I'm just going to promote myself. I'm out to promote, you know, my book launch or this new product. But actually, you know, the host has got an audience that maybe hasn't heard of you before. So, you know, who is that audience? And what, you know, obviously your audience is marketers, right? So we're talking about specifically, you know, how to use podcasting in business and stuff like that. So, you know, you need to keep your topics fresh for that specific audience and relevant for them.
Yeah. That's one thing we're trying to do actually with some format changes at the moment on this podcast, a little bit of more of that how-to advice for marketers, people that want the specific practical kind of ideas on how to improve marketing. With experienced specialists from their respective disciplines. Moving on to, so I guess that covers time really well. And then the next thing I see is money. So people thinking that they have to invest lots of cash in maybe a podcast recording studio and all the equipment. I actually can't remember, but this is covered in a really good guide. I'll link to it in the show notes from podcast.co, where you break down three different types of studio setups.
Yeah.
And it's the equivalent of a basic, intermediate, and advanced. Could you perhaps speak on the costs associated with what you would see as those three different types of setup?
Yeah, of course. I mean, at a basic level, I always recommend, especially if you're doing podcasting for your business, it's worth investing in at least a decent quality microphone, because it makes all the difference and it will sound 10 times better than if you're recording into perhaps your laptop built-in mic, which is fine if you're doing your video calls and stuff. But podcasting, you want to make sure your audio is crisp as possible. So at a basic level, there's various options available. I won't start quoting them, but as you say, if you look at the guide, there'll be all the links to Amazon and everything. Basic level, USB microphone, which is great. You know, you can set it up on your desktop. A lot of them come with little stands, you know, and you can plug it directly into your computer or your laptop, PC or Mac, and it's really plug and play. So there's no technical expertise required, and that immediately will make you sound, you know, 10 times better than just, like I said before, the built-in mic. So make sure you're kind of using it when you're sort of sat in front, you're relatively close, because again, that just helps with, you know, background noise. And if you're not in a perfectly sort of acoustically treated room, it will help with all the kind of echo. And if you're back here like this, you can see what I mean. It doesn't sound as good as if I'm right in front of the mic. Next level up, you might want a USB audio interface and an XLR microphone. This will just generally give you a little bit better quality in terms of it will sound more professional and also allow you to record or connect more than one mic. So you might have a Scarlett 2i2, which is the interface we've used for years, or Audient do great interfaces as well. And these are basically little boxes that sit on your desktop. They have XLR inputs, and if you've ever used any kind of mics in the past, XLR is just like a cable that you connect mics with. And, you know, quite often you'll have two microphones connected, which is, again, great if you're interviewing someone else or if you've got a co-host sat with you as well, so you can record two channels at once. If you want to go to another level up, and again, actually, just to touch on that before I go on the next level, there's tons of microphones then at your disposal, so you can spend as much or as little as you want. You can spend anything from like £50 or $50 right up to a couple of grand if you really want to go all out, you know. But you know, I've recorded a video recently which will be on my YouTube channel, which is where I cover 20 different types of microphone that are kind of popular in podcasting and radio.
I'll link to that.
Yeah,
as well.
It's going live today actually, and then that is ranging from like sort of lesser budgets right up to like the really high end professional stuff that you see used in studio. So again, it just depends on the result you want. You know, I don't think there's actually a huge amount of difference between, you know, we've got a microphone at the office, which is like, it's a Neumann U87. It costs £2,000 and it's in our kind of booth at the office, like our sound booth. That's really expensive. But I actually don't think, you know, for me, I'm not like an audiophile, but I don't think it sounds that much massively different to something which is less than £100. So, you know, just get what you can afford, I think. But there's tons of recommendations on the site anyway. And then I suppose the next up, you might want to buy more equipment. So you might have a mixer, which is, there's a great tool called the Rodecaster Pro. And Rode have released this mixing desk, and it's a completely like an industry game changer. That there's nothing else like there really in the market. I'm sure other manufacturers are going to kind of follow. But it's a kind of hybrid thing. You can plug it in. It can accept SD cards, which mean you can record on location. You can have up to, I think, 4 different mics connected. You can also Bluetooth your phone to it as well. So if you want to take calls, you can take WhatsApp calls or Skype or whatever. You know, again, you can have lots of different audio connected. It's got little pads that you can attach sound effects to. So really cool bit of kit. And it's about £500, I think. Obviously, that's just for the mixer. So you obviously then need to go out and buy mics to connect to it. But I think, you know, if you're looking to kind of get a really professional setup, perhaps you've got, you know, if you're a business and you want to treat a conference room like a podcast studio, that's something that you can get, because, as I say, you can connect 4 mics to it. You can fade people up and down, and it's really cool. But as I say, the fact that you can plug an SD card in means you can take it anywhere. You don't even need a laptop to record, which I think is totally a game changer.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Something I was thinking, and I'm going to link to all of those resources that you mentioned as you were talking, but something that just struck me is that I imagine people that are used to advanced studio setups, given the pandemic, are not able to record together. So I expect that there are lots of people out there that need this information, because they're having to adapt, people that have it podcast already, having to adapt their setups to record differently. Has it checked? I'm guessing for yourself, are you recording at home?
Yeah, so I'm at home. Obviously, I've got quite a good setup because I'm very nerdy, at home. But, you know, we have a studio here in Manchester. We also have one down in London, New York and Amsterdam as well. And normally clients record in these studios. Obviously, they can't do that now, right now, because the studios are closed, and obviously you're not supposed to be that close to people. So it's kind of, a lot of clients have put it on hold, but we have got some who are kind of being brave and they want to continue doing it remotely. It's a real mix, actually, because obviously most of the clients who rent our studios are businesses, they're organizations, and we generally work with those clients on a full service basis. So, you know, we send a producer into the studio to record with them. We then edit it for them and obviously push it up to the platform for publishing, onto the internet. So, really working a full service, and a lot of organizations, that's because they're not really interested, and why should they be, in actually learning how to edit audio or set things up, and they want to get a good quality sounding recording, which is, you know, a professional level, without having to learn how to do it. You know, obviously that comes at an additional expense, because, you know, it's you're paying people for their time, you've got a producer in the room, etc. So that's the sort of premium way to do it. However, you know, if you want really good results in your business and you have a marketing budget to use, then that's certainly a way forward.
I look forward to the day where studios are open again, because at the moment, so I'm recording, we typically record remotely, but we have an office. Our office is closed at the moment, so I'm recording this from home. I'm lucky enough to have a separate room, but it's not, you know, the soundproofing is okay. It's not great. I've got a good microphone, pop shield, so forth, good laptop, and kind of I'm using Zencaster for the remote, which actually the recommendation for that came from podcast.co. So thanks for that. I found this particularly useful with Zencaster. But one thing there are a few things that I just haven't been able to avoid. One of them, which you'll probably hear during this podcast, is my cat somewhere in the background, which I might try and edit out as much as possible. But there are just things that, you know, people knocking the door, people outside shouting, things that you just can't anticipate that I've just been unable to avoid. So I'm looking forward to the day where I can, I think you mentioned earlier, I do like a good audio experience, but at the same time, I think everyone's accepting that there are things at the moment outside of our control. But I'll link to a lot of those resources. I'll be digging into those resources myself to help me. Actually, on the topic, what are some, if you've got any quick tips for remote recording while you're at home, are there any things that come to mind that can
help? I mean, Zencaster you've just mentioned is fantastic. There's another one as well called cleanfeed.net. They have a really good free plan, actually. So you don't really need to pay for it. And Cleanfeed, Zencaster, basically, the way these tools work is they use, browsers have all got really good codecs built into them now. So they just leverage what is basically going on behind the scenes within the Chrome browser. Like P2P communication. So they're pretty cool tools, but they're just opening up what's already in the browser. And so effectively, they're using the right codec, so the quality of the audio is a lot better. I've, interestingly, this 30 in 30 days thing that I'm doing, most of these have been via Zoom. Now, I would advise against using Zoom. Just, it's easy. There's no problem with it. It's acceptable. But I just think the quality of the audio in Zoom isn't as good. I think they're obviously compressing it a lot more. They're using a different codec to sort of reduce bandwidth, which, I suppose when you've got 10 people all chatting together on a video call, makes sense. But if you're just doing a one-on-one conversation with someone, it means that the quality is just not as good. So, you know, Zencaster, CleanFeed, they are audio only. And again, I think some people like video because it gives you a different dynamic. You can see the person. Sometimes people want to record the video as well. But that's kind of my two cents on it, really.
Oh, that's interesting. It's something I found the audio on Zencaster to be amazing. So I've had no problems with it yet. And I think it does help to eliminate some of the issues that we have with home recording, you know, background noise. They've got automatic post-production as well, which helps with the final mix before editing. What did you touch on there? You were talking about that. What was the other tool?
Cleanfeed.net,
And what is that similar
pretty
to
much
Zencaster?
The same, they offer a pro plan like Zencaster. The benefit of these tools is they record locally on each end. So right now Zencaster is recording the raw input from my microphone without sort of streaming over the internet, and then once we've finished, it will then upload it to your end. That's basically how it works. So it means you get the kind of the full HD experience, or if you like, on both sides. So Zencaster, CleanFeed, perfect tools. And as I say, CleanFeed have got a free plan as well, so it's pretty good.
And the point about Zoom is really interesting as well, because it's something I've been toying with in terms of expanding beyond our podcast to video. And firstly, I've been just trying to adapt to make sure that I've got a good audio experience. And I agree, from the podcast that I've listened to, where I know that they've been recorded on Zoom, the audio quality hasn't been as good. And it isn't as enjoyable as an enjoyable listening experience. But also, just as a host, I like to kind of not worry about the visual element. It's something I was speaking to a previous guest about just before we started recording. He was saying to me, you know, I'm so grateful this is just via Zencaster, because when it's via video, there's so many distractions. You can't really focus in on the questions, the audio. You're not really actively listening. And so I've personally enjoyed Zencaster for that, because without the pressure of the video element.
You know, I think you make a very good point there, actually. And that brings back to why podcasts are popular and have been successful, because there is a different form of communication. It's audio only, which is like the oldest. We were speaking to each other as humans before we were writing. So I think that's why it resonates with people so well, because as you say, you've got that focus. Plus also you can have it on in the background. You can listen to a podcast whilst you're doing something else.
Yeah, no, so I think I'm going to stick with audio for the time being because I enjoy the experience more. I'll be interested to know, though, listeners, if you've got any preference, you'd like to see video added to this, let me know. Send us an email at grow@sightvisibility.com. Okay, I'm going to move on to another obstacle, which is knowing the topics to discuss. Again, we briefly touched on this earlier when we were talking about it can be draining if you're covering exactly the same topics. So if for our listeners out there that perhaps are thinking of starting a podcast, maybe they've been told that they're particularly good at active listening or speaking. They know that it might be a good medium. Perhaps they just prefer audio as a medium through which to communicate, rather than blogging or video, but they just don't know where to get started with the topics. What are some tips you can give?
I think ultimately start with the problems or the questions that your audience or your market are having. You know, find out what are the common pitfalls that say, obviously with podcast.co, you know, a lot of the questions. So for example, you know, which equipment do I need? Or, you know, I don't know what to say. We start with that whenever we're doing any marketing. And we always think, okay, how can we answer those questions? Or how can we deliver as much value as possible to that audience, which will resonate with them and you know, help them with solving their problems. So I think that's kind of the clearest and easiest way is just look at your customer base. What questions are coming in via sales or sales inquiries, or, you know, what tech support questions have you got coming in if you're a software company? And just sort of go through those, find the commonalities and build podcast content that answers those questions, and then go above and beyond that, you know, and expand that discussion into other areas. I think that's kind of the easiest way of doing it, really. Another method is, obviously, just getting guests on that you think are going to be relevant to your audience, you know, like you're doing now, and thinking, okay, what areas of expertise does this guest have? You know, what are their experiences and what can we learn from them? And obviously, you can really easily create content, because all you have to do is just sort of think about a bunch of questions that you think that guest would be great at answering, you know, put them down in a doc and, you know, just fire through them. And really, then you're just relying on the guest to actually provide the information, the value. And again, it's just a super easy way of building a lot of content. You know, think about then once you've done that, how can you cross-purpose that? So you can turn it into text, you can turn it into blog post. You know, it doesn't have to just end with the podcast. But yeah, I think, you know, right, starting with questions is always a good place to sort of start, begin building content, especially if you're building a podcast for business. Obviously, if you're doing something for entertainment, it's going to be a little bit different. But in terms of business and marketing, that's my kind of strategy.
With the, you mentioned matchmaker.fm, and I found that, so it's really interesting. I'm just about to launch my personal podcast. So I haven't really got a background, although I have got on LinkedIn that I host this and I've been on other podcasts. And despite that, I had maybe, I think, 10 to 15 replies within the space of a day after first launching a profile on matchmaker.fm. And I noted that I was launching a new advertising podcast and I was potentially looking for guests. And the range of people on matchmaker.fm is really interesting, and some really interesting guests. So there's sometimes, I think, can be, and we'll talk about technical savviness in a moment, but I think one of the perceived difficulties in launching a podcast can sometimes be how to get guests, how to book guests, how to find the right guests. I'm full of praise for matchmaker.fm because I was really surprised at the results, which I achieved very quickly. How long has it been since Matchmaker?
Well, it's really new still. To be honest, Scott, we launched it in February, about middle of February. Wow. We're up to about 3,500 users on there now. That's across both podcasts and sort of experts or guests. And you can have both profiles as well. And, you know, it's fantastic when we've heard lots of, the good thing about Matchmaker and what me as an entrepreneur, why I'm so proud of it is hearing stories just like you've just said. People having excellent results within such a short space of time, because, you know, ultimately we spent probably 6 months working on this product before we brought it to market. We did some tests to make sure that there was kind of a demand for it on the podcast.co site. So we had two funnels which we created. One was basically, you know, do you want to get booked on more podcasts as a guest? And the other one was, you know, have you got a podcast? Are you looking for more interesting guests? And we have good, great responses to both funnels. And all it was just a Google form, you know, to sort of qualify people, which then sort of spurred us on to actually create the platform and build it out as its sort of standalone product, which it is.
Amazing. It gets my glowing recommendation. So if you are, as James was talking through there, if you're thinking about an interview-based podcast, and you don't quite know where to get started in terms of guests and topics, jump on matchmaker.fm, build a profile. It takes maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes. You can link via LinkedIn, Google, I think, those two, maybe via podcast.co as well. You'll quickly find guests and interestingly, you'll quickly find interesting topics related to guests, as guests have to build out a profile as well. So thanks for that. I'm really looking forward to getting on to, I've got interviews lined up now over the next couple of months with guests that I found on matchmaker.fm. So I'm really looking forward to going through that process.
Right.
Just in closing, I've noted as technical savviness as one of the obstacles or potential obstacles to podcasting, or the perceived technical difficulty of launching a podcast. Can you maybe talk to me? I think you touched on this very early, where you talked about, you know, maybe 10 years ago, it was more difficult to launch a podcast than it is now. Perhaps could you speak on the evolution of how easy it has become to launch a podcast and how it works?
Yeah, so we that was really one of the goals when we designed podcast.co, is to sort of break down the barriers, because the way podcasting work, and I won't bore you with it too much detail, is you have something called an RSS feed. And most people are like, you know, what the heck is an RSS feed? And it's like, if you look at an RSS feed, it's ugly as hell. It's just like, looks like computer code almost. And that effectively is a podcast. Now, that barrier for most people is too much. So we thought, right, well, how can we do this without people having to worry about this RSS feed? So the main kind of process with podcast.co, which we started doing differently, and again, a lot of competitors have now started doing this as well, but when we were designing it, there was really no one else doing this. We thought, well, why don't we just handle this process for our clients? So when you sign up, all you have to do is say, please distribute this podcast for me. You never have to look at or understand about how to submit this RSS feed to these various different directories, and they've all got different ways of, you know, accepting submissions, which makes it even more confusing for people. So basically, you upload your first episode. You then say to us, please distribute this to, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, TuneIn, Pocket Cast, various others, and we handle that process for you. So you never have to worry about the kind of mechanics of how it all works. So that's kind of like really one of our main USPs. Aside from that, we offer all sorts of other fancy tools, you know, like automatic AI transcription, which is basically where it turns the audio into text using computer technology. You can create little video clips of your podcast using a partnership we have called Headliner, which is an awesome tool, which you can, as I say, you just go straight from your dashboard. You can start editing it and you can pull out like little quotes or tidbits of, you know, golden nuggets of information, and then share those video clips to social media, which is a fantastic way of driving traffic back to the podcast. And also made the UI super clean and super simple to use, because a lot of the other podcast hosts out there, really, they've been around for like 10 years. And weirdly, they just don't seem to have updated themselves much. So they're kind of quite clunky, hard to use, and they look very old school in the sort of user experience. So that's one of the things what we want to do, is just make the product really clean and, you know, unintimidating for people who are getting started, whilst retaining as much kind of the power features that people expect as well.
It's really interesting that you touched on, I think, user experience and maybe design there. One of the things that stood out to me about podcast.co is you have nailed you have made things like clickable buttons, things you want to click. So whoever is involved in your team, a big shout out to them in terms of the user experience and user interface and the design, because the branding is spot on, and it makes me, it's actually one of the things that helped me get over my procrastination in launching a podcast, or thinking about launching a personal one. We've had this site visibility podcast for over 15 years, so it's not as difficult. But when I was looking into launching a personal podcast, I was looking at different platforms that were available. And the process, the branding, the information that you share via podcast.co, it all helped me get over those little excuses that I had made in my mind. And there's no other way to describe it. It's all very clickable. That's a heart. It's a feeling, isn't it, with user experience? And it's a really good feeling. So big shout out to your team, whoever's working on that.
Well, thanks very much. That means a lot. And as I say, before we launched, you know, this wasn't an overnight process. We spent, you know, the best part of a year. Actually, it was probably just over a year actually building the platform, and before we took it to market. So we put, you know, an incredible amount of work from the get-go into making the process, you know, a pleasant experience for users, because I think that's really core of a product. And especially when, you know, I understand that it is intimidating for a lot of people who want to start podcasting. Traditionally, it has been. So that was really one of the reasons we wanted to build something that was, you know, breaking down those sort of barriers. And it was interesting as well, you mentioned about procrastinating, because I think, you know, this is a nice little point to finish up on. A lot of people will think about starting a podcast, but not actually do it. So the sooner you can start, the better. You know, because ultimately it doesn't have to be perfect from the get-go, and you're not going to have, the chances are you're not going to have millions of people listening to the first episode. So you've got time to sort of reiterate and improve, but starting soon or just getting started is the first step, really. And a lot of people just think about it for far too long, and then, you know, a year later, then there's even more competition out there. So the sooner you can start, the better.
Excellent. So on that note, we've talked about the ease of access or the ease of launching a podcast. It's not as difficult as you may think. There's loads of resources on podcast.co to explore that. The technical difficulty, James, I'll link to all of your references to podcasts and setups. So again, that you there's a low barrier to entry when it comes to the technical difficulty. If you're looking for interview-based podcasts and you need somewhere to start, you've got matchmaker.fm. And in terms of building it into your schedule, if you're struggling for time, consider building out seasons and testing one season first. And maybe you want to give bulk recording a try, as James is doing, or set yourself a challenge, perhaps, as James is doing, for 30 podcasts in 30 days. Maybe that can become a regular thing. Maybe that can become a podcast.co regular thing. So in closing, all of these show notes will be at sitevisibility.co.uk. James, you mentioned Headliner actually somewhere in that conversation. I've been using Headliner more recently to take clips of this podcast. So if you're a listener of this podcast, let us know your feedback on some of the clips we're sharing via social media. We're using the Headliner tool, so big shout out to them. It's been really useful to repurpose our podcast content into social media clips. And James, can you let people know where they can find you?
Of course, visit podcast.co, matchmaker.fm, and if you're interested in radio as well, radio.co. And my social links are all on jamesm.com/connect. That's jamesm.com/connect. That's links to all my social profiles. I'm creating content about podcasting and stuff like that all the time, and also our team are doing that as well on the podcast.co channel, so go check it out.
Amazing. Well, on that note, thanks for your time, James. I know you're very busy, got a very busy day. I wish you all the best with the rest of your challenge. And I look forward to jumping over and speaking to you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a really interesting conversation.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.